Hey guys, on my first take I introduced myself, but then I realized it's probably a given if you're listening to this, you don't know who it is. I didn't need to introduce myself, and now I've spent more time explaining why I didn't introduce myself than I did introducing myself. Anyways, this is Mina Kimes. So Dominique and I recorded this week's podcast on Monday, but there were a couple of things I wanted to address that we touched on as we talked about some of the news items in the preseason. First and foremost, Antonio Brown sadly has lost his appeal to wear his desired helmet. He says he's going to play. They're expecting him at Raiders camp. Dominique and I talked a little bit about sort of his dynamic with the team and with John Gruden. But good news, there's a loophole. He apparently can wear his helmet if it was manufactured in the last 10 years or something. And he has announced on Twitter that he's looking for manufactured in 2010 or after, so get at him. His tweet's also in quotation marks, which solidifies. Otherwise, we talked a bit about sort of Jerry Jones and the Zeke, Dak contract ongoing impasse. And the latest piece of news on that front is there are reports that Dak Prescott is seeking $40 million a year, which I actually think, so yes, the Cowboys clearly want that number out there, but I think while it, you know, it probably doesn't feel great for Dak that people are calling him greedy or whatever, it is a sign that they're going to get a deal done soon. Because often what I've seen with these contract disputes involving like mega deals is there'll be a giant number out there. I remember this kind of with Russell Wilson. There were a lot of reports, oh, he's going to break the NFL contract mold. And then when the actual number comes in and it's still big, it feels a little bit softened in some ways, and so the team can point to that $40 million and say, hey, at least we're not going to get $40 million if it's like $32 million or anything. So that's kind of how I feel about that story. Anyways, enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts absolutely despises the Wildcat. He is biased for obvious reasons. Oh, Dominique, week one of the preseason is in the books. Daniel Jones and Kyler Murray are going to Canton. Jacoby Myers is going to catch 20 touchdowns. Nathan Peterman is the next Michael Vick. Did I get all that right?
Yep. We're done here. All right. Play the music. Let's get out of here.
Nathan Peterman, let's dwell on this for a moment before we get into the stuff, what stuff there is. So I was there. I was in the Coliseum when he broke off. Broke off is really the right verb for what I witnessed. And it was spectacular. I was on the call. Feels good to say.
I was on the call.
I realized too, like, this is my moment to say something. But my first reaction was to say something mercifully. But my second reaction was, imagine being a linebacker on that play. How do you go home at night? How do you look at your wife?
I don't think it's
you gotta
that
pull
bad.
Up. You gotta pull up with a hand. No, oh, my hamstring.
No, it's easy. You find there's so many other people to blame. So when you go home and your wife's like, "What the hell happened? Nathan Peterman got 50 yards on you." You say, "No, my responsibility was to force him back inside, and there was nobody there. Coaches had us in man coverage. It's clearly a zone situation. You just find somebody else to deflect
just
the blame."
Use
to.
A lot of words.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they're also like, they were not respecting his legs, to put it gently. So that was not, I think, something they saw. He looked pretty good, which was, so the rushing was super surprising to me.
Right.
The fact that he looked okay was not surprising to me at all, because I've been through this song and dance with Peterman before. I've seen this movie, like, 2 years ago when he was drafted, he looked very good in preseason, right? He was a fifth rounder in Buffalo. I was there that year doing the Tyrod Taylor story. And so when he came in, I thought it was crazy that they brought him in the Chargers game because the Chargers defense is so ferocious.
Right.
But I thought they would bring him in at some point if Tyrod struggled. And then last summer, he was freaking awesome. And this is like what he does.
What is it about the preseason, the difference between the preseason and the regular season? Like, I understand there's a change in scheme and people are a little bit more aggressive defensively and run more complicated things, but there has to be more to it than that. Is it just the pressure of the moment?
Is there, I think, okay, so like, you know the expression being a gamer. Is there a reverse for that? Being a non-gamer?
A practicer.
A practicer?
I think that's
yeah. Well, it's like a training camp all-star
practice.
But I do think that he is going to win that backup job. I do. He looks better than Mike Glennon.
But how long? I mean, I'm sure the people who listen to your podcast are well aware that John Gruden loved Nathan Peterman coming out of college.
Yeah.
John Gruden was one of the few people who said Nathan Peterman was had the ability to be like a day one starter.
Looks like an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
I think we're
so I bring that up because I think it's important because we know that John Gruden is not high on Derek Carr. What are the chances that John Gruden really wants to prove that Nathan Peterman is good and that John Gruden wants Peterman to at least have a couple good games and start this season?
So I would say they're not negligible.
Got it.
I do think, and I've said this before about the Raiders when we've done like division previews and talked about them, Derek Carr was actually a lot better down the stretch than anyone knows because nobody watched Raiders football except for Raiders fans. And he was actually, he like really picked up Gruden's system and improved a lot. But I do think a lot of that depends on the presence of a certain man that I want to talk to you about today. And that, of course, is J.J. Nelson. No, I'm just kidding. It's Antonio Brown. So today, the way I want to do this today is, since it's week one of preseason, I thought a good way to talk about some of the action in preseason and some of the stories around the NFL is, I'm going to read you a headline, and then I want you, Dominique Foxworth, to just say, buying it or not buying it.
Okay.
Got that?
Buying it or not buying it.
Or you can come up with a cute thing if you
All
want.
Right, that was just, we're not selling it. You either buy it or you're not buying it.
Yeah, I don't want to rip. That's not around the horns thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can steal it from them. We're the same company.
Okay, buying it or selling it. All right. And I gave it away, the first one. Headline. Gruden defends Antonio Brown. Calls helmet, quote, personal issue.
Leasing it.
Okay. All right.
I think I'm buying it, to be fair. I think that John Gruden has... Since he's returned, he hasn't been a bad necessarily coach. I guess the record would suggest that he has not been a great coach, but I think the expectations aren't very high, particularly early on since he signed a 10-year contract. But I think the expectations will get higher later once he has his full complement of players and scheme and they're in the new city. But I haven't seen anything in particular that suggests to me that John Gruden is a good pro football coach until now. Like, this is the only thing that I've seen.
Really?
Yeah.
This is the most impressive how he's handled this.
I think that you and I talk about this a lot, like the jobs of the coach and how important the coach is for a team. And I think one of the jobs that is underappreciated is the ability to manage the personalities in the locker room. And that's why I'm often very high on, John Harbaugh. He was not a coach that I played for. He's not a great tactician. He was a special teams coach. He would come into our defensive meeting rooms and not necessarily be fully aware of the scheme, which is one thing. I mean, he understood the scheme, but he would say things to, like, in quarters coverage, he would say things about, like, the safeties needing to get depth. And you're like, nope, actually, quarter coverage, safeties don't need to get depth. And we would look at each other like, oh, okay, whatever. But what he was really good at was managing the locker room and the personalities. And I think that is and why I think that's important, because while we all want to chase after the best offensive young coach because we think that that is important, you can hire an offensive coordinator to do that. No one can do the managing the locker room. No one is positioned to manage the locker room in the way that a head coach is.
What you just said about Harbaugh not knowing everything, that's so interesting to me because when you think about it, of course, like most coaches, you come up on one side of the ball. He's unusual in special teams. Of course you're not going to know everything about the other. McVay always says this about Gruden, that he taught him to look at it through 22, right? Which is, he tries to understand everything. Yeah. But everyone naturally has some limitations.
But even if you're – I think the reason why it's important is because he came up as a special teams guy. And I think he coached some defensive backs at some point.
Yeah, he did coach DBs. Yeah, you're right.
But he came up as a special teams guy. And that's different because if you're an offensive coach – you know defense, at least to some degree.
Right.
Because you are trying to put defenders in dilemmas, essentially. So you know their rules on at least the basic stuff. But you're a special teams coach. The only thing that you really need to do, because special teams plays are simple. They're not that complicated.
Right.
Only thing you really need to do is manage personalities. Only thing that you're really responsible for is making guys do a job that they don't want to do.
Exactly.
Because there are very few guys who want to be on special teams.
And you know guys across the team.
You know the whole team. Yeah. You have to manage guys in a way that it's – when you're a position coach, you have those guys in your room all the time. Special teams coach, you get them for 20 minutes a week, and the rest of it is about catching them in the cafeteria, catching them in a locker room. So I think it's a valuable skill.
It's interesting to hear you say you didn't, like, lose respect for him, I guess, when he made a mistake. I I don't know why this makes me think of being in like fourth grade, and I had a teacher, and I didn't go to a great elementary school. I can't remember where I was living at the time, maybe Virginia. And I remember we were talking about geography, and the teacher asked everyone to name a country. And I remember very vividly, extremely tangential, but welcome to the Media Time Show if you're doing
I
just
like
have this super vivid memory of being like, Turkey.
Yeah.
And the teacher looking at me and laughing in my face and going, Turkey's not a country, dear. Yeah. And I remember going home that night to my dad and being like, I think my teacher might be stupid.
Yes.
And I never, it's like that moment as a child when you realize adults might not know everything.
I had the same incident. I guess I was probably in second or third grade and we were supposed to be guessing what president did something. And like we went through a bunch of kids and no one could guess it. And I said, Garfield. And she thought I was trying to make a joke about the cat.
Oh, wow.
And she like got upset at me and I was like,
lady,
like I'm a kid. So I was a sensitive dude. I was near tears and I thought like I was wrong.
Poor little dummy.
Then I figured it out later that she's just a dum-dum.
To bring it back to football. By the way, we're going to talk about Ravens special teams later, and Harbaugh, I have something I think is kind of interesting on that. It's an interesting story, but I think he's handling it right. I also think, the odds of Antonio Brown actually skipping the season or whatever, or the, right. I think the Raiders, the only way they could not pay him is they put him on the non-football injury list. I think that's just not going to happen. Yeah. So we should probably all let it go.
No, we need something to talk about. Thanks, AB.
Headline. This is a good one. It's a reckoning for me. Daniel Jones has forced the Eli Manning clock to already start.
Absolutely buying it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, they drafted him number 6 overall. The clock started when they drafted him. And I think that every little bit that he plays well, and he did play really well, and I think we could excuse it away for preseason against the second team with the ones out there. Like, we could find so many ways to excuse it. But what he did that made me feel good or feel better about him was how he played. He seemed to anticipate open guys. He seemed decisive. He was accurate. As you know, I've come to really feel accuracy is one of the most important things a quarterback can have. So he did everything that you would expect a franchise quarterback to do. And I know it's preseason. I don't want to overreact, but we all overreacted before he even put on a uniform. We all were like,
I don't know what you're saying. I was completely cool.
This is so much worse than I imagined. And so much better. Daniel Jones at number six.
We all were like, this is the worst pick ever before he even played. Yeah. So I think it's fair that after, what, 6 passes, we should say, all right.
So, Dan Orlovsky, our pal, friend of the show, tweeted, but relax, he played with starters versus backups at best. It was like half backups, I think, on the Jets side. Quinnen was in, I noticed that. And his, although the Jets did not get any pressure on that, I did notice that he was completely clean. And his TD pass, the corner and safety that side, were undrafted free agents from this year. I think that matters.
Yeah, it matters.
I think what I walk away, so 5 for 5, 67 yards, touchdown pass to Betty Fowler. It was a really nice pass. I walk away from that thinking starters probably would have disrupted a few of those plays, whether through the pass rush or through coverage, but got the ball out quickly, super quickly, which I'm impressed by. And compared to Eli Manning, to bring it back to the question, he throws with zip.
Yeah.
The passes got, you know, they got to where they need to go on time. Eli doesn't do that anymore. They're certainly not consistently. So I'm sure he's not there as a decision maker yet. I think actually running back Wayne Gallman, the backup, came out afterwards and credited himself for pass protect, picking up a blitz when Jones forgot to, like, send over the tight end.
I am sympathetic to Wayne Gallman. Because as a non-star player in a position that doesn't get much credit, like if you lock somebody down, the quarterback doesn't throw it your direction, and no one freaking notices it. So good for Gallman. Way to pick up that blitz, baby.
Player quotes are so goofy in the preseason, because afterwards I saw like the New York tabloids were the Jets play defenders on this play say like, Daniel Jones is excellent. What are they going to say? He sucked and he destroyed us? Of course they're going to compliment him. But anyways. Yeah, so the decision making might not be there, but it's incredibly obvious already that through his athleticism and the strength of his arm, he should be starting sooner rather than later. Compare again, it's all relative. And by the way, another reason why I think he should start at some point this season, sooner again rather than later, is their offensive line is pretty good now. It's really shored up. They brought in Kevin Zeitler, and I do think And Hernandez, the other guard, will probably take a step forward. So I think it's a good situation. It's a relatively, granted the receivers are, you know, it's a troubling scenario with all the injuries, but it's not a bad situation.
You know this as well as anyone, is that it seems like there are a couple formulas to win in the NFL. One of them is have a young, cheap quarterback, or you have a difference maker at quarterback. They only have one.
Yeah.
They have a young, cheap quarterback. So if they want to win anytime soon, they need Daniel Jones to start. The sooner Daniel Jones starts and is good, the bigger their window is, and he progresses even faster. So I think as soon as they drafted him, I mean, the clock started on Eli. The clock was ticking on Eli last year.
Yeah.
People were calling for changes to be made.
And the fans are ready. Like, yeah. They're going to be – second Eli struggles. By the way, I don't think Eli looked terrible necessarily. I mean, they didn't ask him to do anything. But, like,
one ball,
the second he struggles, those fans are going to be – it's not like what happened where they brought in Geno.
Yeah.
Poor Geno was put in a terrible situation.
Is there any part of you that thinks that Eli is not – Eli is prepared for this, and like the David Cutcliffe connection. Cutcliffe was a coach at Duke where Daniel Jones was. Cutcliffe has also been a longtime Manning coach in college with Peyton and Eli. He's a friend of the family. And that always stuck in my mind that when they drafted him, I imagine that there were some conversations with Cutcliffe, and maybe he's thinking, let's go ahead and move this on.
That would be nice, but Eli has given zero indication that he's ready to be that sort of shepherd or Sherpa, rather. So I don't know. I mean, you would like to think that they've got that succession plan in place, but we haven't heard anything from him.
Succession. What a great TV show.
So we'll talk about that later. Right. Headline. Kyle Shanahan. Zero preseason. This is him speaking. Zero preseason games would be better than four. So, well, first tell me, buying or selling?
Buy it!
Okay. So I want to talk about this with you because, so, I don't know if you heard, but I'm calling the Rams games. And as you know, Sean McVay doesn't play most, if not any, of his starters. And week one, it certainly felt like to me a lot of teams around the league are starting to go in that direction because the games are kind of trash. Right. Now, It was weird, though, Dominique. Like, the Saints, except for Breeze, had almost all their starters out on offense with Teddy. Maybe they just want Teddy to succeed.
Right.
Who doesn't? But I do think, just from an entertainment perspective, there's something kind of marinating about the quality of these games. And increasingly, it feels like coaches are more and more comfortable saying, yeah, I just don't want to do this. I don't want to risk injury. Look at the Rams. They didn't do it. And guess what? They started, like, 7-1 or whatever. Right. So, like, do you feel like there's a sea change, I suppose, at hand?
I think so. And I think that preseason games are, they have a tiny bit of value. And I think the biggest value they have is for people to go through the operations before the game more than it is even on field. Because these guys know how to play football. Most of them have played in front of crowds. Like, they're not going to be nervous or any more nervous than they normally are. Like, I don't think that there's any value in going out on the field, which you get in a preseason game. What you get value from, I think, is particularly preseason game is challenging to get any value because you are forced to do such vanilla things because that is film for other people to watch. So maybe you would want to test the mental processing ability of your players by putting them in tough situations. But the offense is running basic stuff. You're running basic stuff and vice versa. So I don't know that you get that many great situations for your guys. The risk reward isn't there.
Shanahan in particular, I feel like, is especially motivated to not want to. I mean, that team is banged up, right? So here's the guys who are uncertain for the first week. Bosa, that's bad. Jason Verrett, which is sadly predictable. Another cornerback, Kawan Williams, the center, Weston Richburg, and running back, Jerick McKinnon. All five of those guys are uncertain for week one, which not great for the Niners. So he also said, by the way, and I really want to talk to you about this, he would prefer more practice time instead of games. And that's,
sorry about that.
That's kind of a hot topic right now, the practice thing, which is, so you have Jared Goff. He was at Rams camp, which I was at because I'm calling the Rams games. So he was saying how he really values those joint practices more than anything because it's a controlled environment and his O-line is getting reps against, was Bosa and Ingram and then the Raiders. And, but then on the other hand, you had Aaron Rodgers was complaining about joint practices. I think like the Texans cornerback tried to beat up someone or something. I wanted to ask you, like, as a player, like, what do you think about joint practices being a controlled environment and being at all preferable to preseason games?
So the joint practices, I understand why it's preferable, because you want to practice situations and you can create those situations. Yeah. And you want to in training camp, you get tired of going against your other guy, your same team. So it's nice to go against some other guys and see some different things. So I recognize the value there, but it is a high stakes situation, because the intensity ratchets up to game level intensity, or close to game level intensity.
So without, like, a pass rusher's not pulling up at all?
No, I mean, they're not going to sack the quarterback, but you saw, I mean, Deshaun Watson got taken down. They're not going to intentionally sack the quarterback. And it's normally like thud, which means like you just wrap up the runner. You're not going to take him to the ground necessarily, but the intensity ratchets up to such a level that I'm not sure that you can control some of those things. And then there is no fear of repercussions if it escalates. I've definitely been in a couple, I think it was the Cowboys. We had a kind of a camp brawl when I was in
Denver. Every single one of these camps is a fight, first of all. It's right. It's inevitable.
And it's different when it's a fight in camp with your own team because, like, no one really wants that to happen. You break it up. But when it's against a whole nother organization, then you are kind of held accountable. We watch the film afterwards of the fight, and if you are spotted walking away from the fight or not engaging in a fight, we got a problem.
Let me ask you about the fights. In the camp, the day I was at, there was a fight, and word got around super. It's just like high school. Like, it's like, you hear about the fight? I'm like, oh man, who was involved in the fight? Like, the word spreads so quickly. And the guy in the Rams who was involved is like a undrafted or late round. I should know this. His name's Josh Caraway. I think he's late round from TCU last year.
Showing off.
Anyways, it's actually sad that I don't have that information. He actually was really good in the game. Do you think coaches, like, is that a point against, first, there's three options. Does it matter that he got a fight? Do coaches like it that he got chippy, or is it a point against him?
It depends on the coach.
Okay.
I've had coaches who are like, we're professionals, we don't fight.
Okay.
And I've had other coaches love it. So why the coaches who love it normally love it is because, and sometimes some coaches will send a guy to go do it because they feel
an
like.
An enforcer.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's. And mostly if it's an internal fight.
Okay.
So like not in a joint practice, but a team fight, if practice starts off slow, that is one of the tools that coaches have been known to use that it'll lift up the morale. They'll send the guy in and like, that's
hit a dude.
Yeah. Go start some bleep with, the O-line, or go start something with whatever.
Amazing. And, in the joint practices, I feel like it would depend on the context of the fight, right? Like an edge rusher just kind of lingered a little too long over the quarterback, and I'm coaching the O-line, and a guy gets in there to defend
they
his.
Love it.
Yeah, right.
There's no way an O-line coach is not happy when one of his big uglies is fighting to
Amazing.
Protect the quarterback.
Incredible. Okay. Headline. This is, I think, one of the bigger moves we've seen in August. Browns trade Duke Johnson to the Texans for a 2020 pick. It was a conditional fourth round pick that could become a third.
I feel like I'm running out of money because I'm buying everything. But I mean,
so you think this matters?
Oh, I guess if that's the question, if it doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, we know it happened.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know that we know it happened, but I guess the like, question is like, it's better for both teams, I guess, was what I was thinking.
You think
like,
this is a win-win?
Yeah, it's a win-win. I mean, the Browns are deep at that position, so I don't think they need Duke Johnson. He wanted out. They got him out.
Yeah.
I think that obviously the Texans could use some support in the backfield, so they get him in there. And he's a pass-catching back,
yes,
which is, I think, an awesome addition. He was one of the players I was excited about when I drafted last year for fantasy stuff, because I thought he was going to ball out because I knew he was a great pass catcher.
Not quite.
Womp, womp, womp.
Johnson's career receiving grade ranks fifth amongst running backs, dating back to 2015.
Nice.
It's not really an element of Lamar Miller's game. I'm not a huge fan of his game generally. I think they could have used to upgrade. So from the Browns' perspective, I agree that they do have, you know, obviously Nick Chubb's fantastic. Kareem Hunt is a tremendous pass catching back, but he doesn't get back to the, he doesn't come out. He suspended, what, 8 games, was it?
Yep.
So, you know, you could be that, you know, it's not like he's there immediately or whatever, but,
they don't need more pass catching options.
I don't think they need a glut of pass catching options. It's true. And to get a third potentially, a fourth, a third, that's pretty good. That's a pretty nice return. I think part of this deal that maybe struck both teams, right? It shouldn't, but I imagine both sides are looking at this, and if you're a Texans fan, you're saying, a running back, can he pass pro? And if you're a Browns fan, you're looking at, we got a fourth, what about an offensive lineman? Because right. Both of these teams, I would argue, I think to differing degrees, right. Their weaknesses are their offensive lines, right? Let's start with the Texans. That's, like, they need Trent. They don't need Duke Johnson. They need Trent Williams.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is that this trade is... Okay, I don't want to go too far and pretend that general managers are all smart or all good.
The Browns is pretty good.
But I'm going to throw
Well, we know the Texans are not.
Yes.
Because they're just...
They don't have one.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there and say that I'm going to assume that both teams did the best they could to find a suitor to fill the holes that they want. So I think it's easy to say, like, well, they should have used this to get an interior offensive lineman to replace Zeitler. Like that, of course, they should have. But I don't think that was on the table. I think that most teams, if they have a good guard, they are not trading for a running back. And a running back was not even an every down, like, difference maker. I don't think Duke Johnson adds a point to the spread if he's on your team. So, like, I think that's a hard thing for them to ask unless you want them to package some other things. So.
Well, and now the Browns, this does give them ammunition if they're still right. trying to potentially.
Yeah.
Starting with the Texans, right now it looks like they're lying. So they got Matt Khalil. Uh-huh. They drafted Titus Howard in the first round. He's a tackle, but it sounds like they're going to start him at guard for some reason. Then you got Martin Fulton, Chantrell Henderson. I mean, it's just, it could be worse than last year. I mean, it's really hard to be worse than last year, but it's extraordinarily depressing to me that offensive line wasn't shored up for Deshaun Watson. Extraordinarily.
I guess I feel like that's a different story than this story.
It
We're
is,
yeah. selling this story. Like, I agree with you there, but.
I know, maybe, I just want to talk about the lines.
Okay, yeah.
It's great they got a running back.
Yeah, good, get a running back, but get some linemen too.
No, and then.
They're growing trees.
On the Browns side, so they do. Well, I don't know if you've heard, but there's a was he an all pro? Well, at least a Pro Bowl offensive lineman in Virginia who's not happy.
Yes.
So, I would think one of these teams has got to be on the phone to Washington to get Trent Williams.
I would think so.
And I do think, okay, so the Browns, they believe, so last year there was like two halves of the season, right? And it's a lot of it's been chalked up to Freddie Kitchens coming in and suddenly the offense explodes. Baker's no longer getting sacked every 10 seconds. A lot of that is offensive design. A lot of that is Baker Mayfield getting the ball out quickly. But the offensive line's play improved a lot as well. And that's around the time Robinson, who many had seen to be a draft bust, he was second overall pick, St. Louis, started playing. So they think he's going to continue being the guy. But I kind of have to see a little bit more to believe it. And then it's still a question mark at right guard with Zeitler gone. If there's a weakness to this whole Browns, which I am all in, as you know, it's the offensive line.
These teams are similar in that they have a lot of really impressive playmakers at receiver, and they have a young, talented quarterback. And I would argue that you're never going to have a completely perfect roster, but it's nice to have guys at all these positions that are scary. Like, that helps with you being able to protect. You could face teams that are going to rush three or only rush four and be unlikely to blitz because they'd be terrified of you getting the ball to Will Fuller if you're the Texans in space, or getting the ball to DeSean Hopkins or leaving Hopkins in a one-on-one. And the same is obviously true for Odell Beckham. Like, it's the best spin I can put on the fact that they don't have an offensive lineman, or they don't have a strong enough offensive line to protect a young quarterback.
You're not going to like this headline.
Give it to me.
Jerry Jones, Tony Pollard, capable of carrying the load.
Oh, gosh, I'm selling that. Selling the hell out of that headline.
Could there be a more transparent?
Oh, my gosh. I've tired of Jerry Jones and the Cowboys brass and his son Steven getting out here and negotiating through the media. Like, even with the recent DAC $30 million a year thing that was leaked, like, that had to come from them. And the purpose of doing that is only to, like, embarrass DAC and put pressure on DAC and mm-hmm. have the media and the fans turn on him and say, you better accept that $30 million a year, contract. And complete transparency, like, that means nothing out of context. You don't know what the guarantees are. You don't know if it's like a super heavy backloaded contract that they can get out of. Like, it's just not fair to throw that out there on deck.
I think I've told this story before, but I was with Von Miller the summer he was negotiating his deal.
You wrote a great story about it.
Thank you. After he had just been, he really was, you know, the MVP. Mm-hmm. He was MVP of the Super Bowl, right? Yeah. And he, I mean, he carried Peyton Manning across the finish line. And, I was in with him in the car. So he's thinking he's going to get paid, but it was contentious. And we were in a car going to the lake to go fishing. And I have a weird life. And I remember he's such a nice dude, but he was on his phone because someone broke the news of like the contract or, and it was a lot of money and he had turned down similarly to the DAC thing. And, you know, people were like, he's greedy or whatever. And I just so vividly remember him searching his own name on Twitter and seeing what people were saying about him. And you had, you know, as a player, you have to like not care. Right. Mm-hmm. And some guys like Darrell Revis famously does not care.
You wrote a great piece about him too.
Thank you. But I'm just trying to set up brags. But yeah, you know, all this is very, when you hear a number, there's always a purpose to it. The Tony Pollard thing though. So it's interesting because I feel like people have been talking about Zeke and Melvin Gordon's holdouts together. Right. And with Gordon, almost everyone is kind of like, don't pay him a lot of money.
Yeah.
In part because people know that Justin Jackson and Austin Ekeler are good.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much in Dallas. So this feels like, you know, Jones is trying to push their running back saying, hey, he's pretty good too. I mean, I think he ran for like 16 yards or something in his debut. Not his fault necessarily, but,
I wonder, so knowing what I know about you and your beliefs on team building, do you think they should pay Dak? Obviously the price matters.
Wait, Zeke or Dak?
I'm sorry.
Zeke.
Obviously they pay Dak. Do you think they should pay Zeke? Cause obviously the price matters, but let's say identical to the girly.
Give me
deal.
A number. Oh,
Or a little bit more than a girly deal.
No, I would not pay him more than the girly deal. Here's the thing about this question, right? So in a vacuum, no, I wouldn't, I would never, that would not be where I'd want to pay my money as a team. If I was building a team from scratch, I would not pay a running back.
But if you were in this situation.
Right. And that's where it gets tricky because you've got a new offensive coordinator coming in who's probably built his entire offense around having Ezekiel Elliott on the field.
Kellen Moore.
Yes, Kellen Moore, who we've been hearing good things about from our friend Dan Orlowski, but I think it's like a very tough ask to have him come into total uncertainty, right? Which is why there's many reasons why I think they're going to pay Zeke. One, number one being it's Jerry Jones, but
You would pay him. You would pay him, girly money. It seems like you don't want to, but you would.
I would stop at girly money. I would hold the line there. How about you?
Yeah, I'd pay him. I mean,
would you pay him $17 million a year?
Dude, yes.
Dude.
Yes.
You're screwed. Your team's screwed.
I mean, I think the reason why I would pay him is because you have, like, the NFL exists in windows and, like, there are ways to structure the contract and hopefully be able to make it short term and move on from him quickly. But you have short windows to win Super Bowls.
Oh, well, now you're like, okay, I'll pay him, but I'm going to get out of it.
Okay, forget it. I'll pay him girly, exact contract. Or even a little bit more.
All right.
Because I believe in the idea that they currently have the best roster that they will have for decades to come right now, and they need to win the Super Bowl this year.
That would be a great offer. Speaking of great offers.
Well done.
Let me tell you about ButcherBox.
Oh, I love it.
If you haven't taken advantage of their amazing offers that I've been talking about for a while, you got to listen up. Every month, ButcherBox delivers humanely raised 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, and wild-caught Alaskan salmon directly to your door. Choose from four curated boxes or customize your own box with all your favorite cuts. And with free shipping, ButcherBox makes getting high-quality meat with no added hormones or antibiotics easier than ever. ButcherBox has a ton of awesome recipes and resources on their website that will help you bring out all of the flavor of each cut of meat you get from ButcherBox. And this month, ButcherBox is offering new members $20 off your first box, plus
free bacon.
It is true. Free bacon. You didn't even see what I was reading, and you got it right. 2 pounds of ground beef and 2 packs of bacon when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Mina. That's right. In addition to all the great meat you get, ButcherBox is knocking $20 off your first box and throwing in an additional 2 pounds of ground beef and 2 pounds of bacon. Lenny would be salivating. When you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Mina. ButcherBox.com/Mina.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
Right. I'm reading these off of iTunes directly. If you leave a review there and it's 5 stars, I'll acknowledge it. I will answer your question. PDD2499 asks, hey, Mina, big fan. My question is, what kind of website sources do you use to get your stats so I can use them to defend my quarterback, Dak? Well, if you're defending Dak, you're always defending Dak on television. Where do you get your stats to defend Dak?
My heart.
Also.
So is this really P. Diddy?
Who's to say?
Yeah, so I think
I don't know if he's a Cowboys fan.
If he wants stats to defend Dak, I think the best stats to defend Dak are that he's durable. He's played all of his games. His QBR over the last 3 years, I think, is fourth amongst other players who have played more than 40 games in that time period. And his playoff QBR is in the 70s, which goes up above most quarterbacks. He's led game-winning drives. He went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers. Like, there are lots of things you can point to defend Dak. I'm not sure exactly what site you would go to, though, because I think most of the advanced analytics sites would point out that Dak is not all that accurate, even though his accuracy is improved and those things are harmful. But I think the QBR takes into account his running ability and all that stuff. And I think those things are the things I would point to, is that he excels in the playoffs. And of the people who have started for those 3 years, he's up in the top, I think, fourth.
QBR is interesting because I do think it's a really valuable statistic, and it tells you more than passer rating.
Passer rating's trash.
But also you look at QBR and, like, Mitch Trubisky's number two, and I don't think he's second best quarterback in the NFL. I think sometimes it's not necessarily that you're overweighting rushing, but if you don't have a large sample size per se, a quarterback can benefit from that. So just to kind of answer your question, what I look at, I have True Media, which is, we have access to that.
I didn't want to bring that up.
You're trying to give the people the tools they can use.
They can't use True Media.
Then go to Football Outsiders and look at, you know, quarterbacks, DVOA, and I always say this, about when you look at quarterbacks and statistics, you have to look at everything and, like, look at it all to paint a complete picture. And it's not necessarily advanced stats. You know, it's simple things like interception, you know, adjusted yards per attempt. I just like to look at it all and then kind of step back and see what it is. Next question. I feel like this is a handle I shouldn't read.
Okay. Moving on.
Read
it and beep it.
He says, what is it's LSQURTYOUBOI? I don't know. Would you rather be a Knicks fan or eat 20 hot dogs in one sitting? I could eat 20 hot dogs.
Set them up. Bring the dogs in. I don't want to talk about it.
Hot dogs.
You can't eat 20 hot dogs in bun in one sitting?
No, I can't.
What do you consider a sitting? Like a day?
How many hot dogs could you eat in an hour? If your life depended on it.
If my life depended on it, let's say 12, 15 maybe?
Really? I think I could get to 10.
Yeah.
And then I would throw up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I plan on throwing up eventually.
Oh, right. And just keep answering. Yeah. D Stamper 33, or like Doug Stamper on House of Cards, maybe, asks, will Patricia get the Lions defense turned around this year? Well, we've talked about the team. There are definitely some things to like about this defense, I suppose. You know, I think I'm still a little bit concerned about the secondary. But the defensive line is really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to project. I feel like I'm looking at their roster right now, and I guess Snacks is a big addition. It's not like huge addition.
And Mike Daniels.
Mike Daniels. Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like there's a huge addition that I can hang my hat on, and there's nothing about Matt Patricia that makes me believe that he's a savant and that he's going to figure it out.
I can't remember. I think it might have been, I don't know if it was Kevin Clark or someone I know who tweeted that, like Patricia.
Oh, Trey Flowers. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. I like him.
Really caught up today. So no, the line
you're
is
caught
good.
Up. I just
the line
it.
Is good. Patty5163 has a bunch of questions. I'm going to take one of them, which is, how did you get Lenny? Well, Patty, the Lenny's origin story, I mean, how long do we have? Because I could tell this over the course of like 4 hours. I remember it vividly, like it was yesterday. The Seahawks had just lost to the Chargers. I was very upset. But okay, I'll keep it short because Dominique is not happy with me right now. He was adopted from a shelter in the Bronx, but he came, as I've said, from Alabama. So it was like a shelter exchange kind of situation. So he took a bus up. What?
He's from Alabama. I can't trust him. Proceed.
You think he's a Bama fan?
Probably.
And he took a bus up, so we had to wait. And I remember I was sitting in my CEO's jersey. I was very upset because they had just lost. And the bus pulls up, and really there were children inside. Still to this day do not understand why. And he just jumps out, and he's so like docile and cute. Little I know, he was just exhausted from riding for like, you know, 24 hours or whatever. And then the next day I realized he was a monster.
And you love that about it.
Limonella 213. Mina. Last question. If you were the Bachelorette and the 32 starting quarterbacks for the available Bachelors, pretend they're all single. I'm also not single. So I want to hear your answer. Who would be your top five to make it through? Okay. I'm not going to do the whole answer. I'm going to just use one.
Okay.
Who would be like the quarterback if you were a single woman that you, and you're the Bachelorette, and they're all, who would you give your final rose to? Husband, too.
Okay, as a husband. So I gotta take it to account.
Yeah, yeah, so like personality.
Personality,
yeah,
and
like
stuff.
A good dude. Who do you think would be the best husband material of the quarterbacks? You're a single lady.
Your boy.
You're single. Russell?
Russell seems like.
He seems like a good dad.
Yeah, he seems
like. But like, you also have to like hang out with this person.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't seem like a lot of fun to hang out with.
I know.
I mean, Cam is very handsome, but there's a lot of other things that come with with Cam that I don't necessarily want to sign up for. And Garoppolo's a pretty boy too, right?
Yeah, but I wouldn't. I mean, you know, you got to marry this guy. I'm looking at the list too. Right,
Aaron Rodgers kind of seems like a jerk a little bit. Tom Brady? Brady?
That's a no for me, dog.
No thanks, Mariota. No thanks, Winston. Obviously.
Deshaun Watson seems cool. Yeah. He seems like he's a really nice guy.
All right, we've decided.
You see my boy Sam Darnold? Tear it up.
Yeah, but he got a square head. It's not attractive.
He looks like the older brother from Home Improvement. You know?
He does look like him.
All right, guys. As always, if you leave more questions, we're in July now, so we're moving along.
Leave some better questions.
You know, it's preseason football, and you know what that means.
What?
The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast with Matthew Berry, Field Yates, and Stefania Bell is kicking. It's a place to go for up-to-minute player news, rankings, sleepers that help you win your league. Download and subscribe to the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So, a little brag there. I do listen to the pod. I'm in a very deep dynasty league. Now we're just, like, grabbing super random guys. And literally, the like, hours before the Patriots played their first preseason game, I grabbed Jacoby Myers. Torn it up. I was bragging about it. I'm sure it won't mean anything, but headline, I hope I'm saying this right. I think this is interesting. Kare Vedvik comes to the Vikings in trade. So he was the Baltimore backup kicker, and the Vikings signed him as a kicker and a punter. Bill Barnwell, friend of the show, tweeted, "The last time a team used one player to handle kicks and punts was the Falcons in 2006. He went 3-for-9. Not great, Michael Conan. But Vedvik was apparently highly coveted by a bunch of teams. And then in the preseason opener on Thursday night, he made all four field goal attempts, including a 55-yarder. Kind of an interesting story, this guy. So he doesn't look like what you think.
Okay.
First of all, Google image. He's a native Norwegian. He got into football by watching movies, and then he came to the U.S. as a foreign exchange student in Kansas.
Huh?
Dominic just saw a picture of him. And so then he became good and, I guess, came to the U.S., got a scholarship offer from Marshall. So that'll kind of address what we were just talking about if you're just listening. And so he punted, and then he took over kicking duties as a senior. So then he gets picked up as an undrafted free agent by Baltimore, which, to bring it full circle, special teams, Harbaugh, right, has been very good at finding. The Baltimore brought up Will Lutz, who's on the Saints now, Graham Gano on the Panthers, and Steve Hauschka. So they've got a long lineage of finding kickers. And But then, so Dominique, he comes to Baltimore. His dreams are all coming true. Then in the beginning of the NFL season, week one, he was jumped and assaulted in East Baltimore and found, like, on the street somewhere at 4 a.m. He was in the hospital for 5 days. He had to have, like, face surgery. Couldn't play the entire season. So it's a real comeback story. Sorry, I gave you the whole.
No.
I assumed
I'm
that you
Baltimore.
Wouldn't know a lot about this guy's story. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to hear it before you buy or sell. And it's to the Vikings.
So
which...
I'm buying it. Baltimore is very high on special teams. I think Jerry Rosberg was the special teams coach when I was there. He was also the assistant head coach, which is another unique thing that most teams don't necessarily have the assistant head coach or special teams coach. But special teams are important there. They have Justin Tucker, the greatest kicker slash opera singer that has ever lived.
A legend.
But I've always wondered how they could not pull this off, how teams could not pull off, like, as coveted as roster spots are.
Yeah.
Wasting a roster spot, and yeah, I'll call it wasting a roster spot, on
a backup kicker?
No, I just mean a game day roster spot.
Yeah.
How we have a game day roster spot dedicated to a kicker and one also dedicated to a punter. And some teams even go to have a kickoff specialist. I guess they do it less now that we've moved the kickoff up.
Yeah.
But to dedicate roster spots to guys who are going to play 5 or 6 downs a game at best to me seems kind of odd. And when you ask players, like you ask a running back to be able to catch the ball and run the ball and block, why can't we ask a punter to also kick field goals
right.
or field goal kicker to also punt? Like, we're not asking you to do that much.
It's certainly a useful skill because, look, I hate it when anyone gets injured.
Right.
But I kind of love it when a kicker or punter gets injured because then it's like, who else can do this on the roster?
So,
and it gets real interesting. So having a punter who can kick or vice versa is obviously useful.
I've always thought that we should change the rule and make it so that add a rule that they're your kickers and punters must be position players.
It would be humorous. One other thing I'll say about this story that I think is interesting about the Vikings grabbing him is, you know what that means? The Bears couldn't grab him.
Right.
And of course we know the Bears' kicking struggles. I think it's safe to say they are one of the teams interested in this guy. And Matt Nagy is apparently like obsessed with finding a kicker. Right, and it's kind of sad at this point. Like, he makes them watch it over and over. I don't know, the whole thing.
Did you see I'm sure you saw the timeout situation.
Yeah, Ron Rivera icing.
I need the Bears to have that same kicker kick a game-winning playoff field goal against the
Panthers. Elliot
because
Fry.
Because Ron Rivera is so interested in helping them out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Helping them find a kicker.
Headline. Will replay review of PI calls and non-calls be influenced by the outcome of the play? So this isn't really a news story, but I thought it was really interesting, and I want to get your take on it. It's from Pro Football Talk, who points out that so for those who have been living under a rock or are blissfully unaware of the arcane rule changes in the NFL, maybe that's a better way to put it, you can challenge
pass interference.
PI now. There was an OPI challenge in a game recently,
nice.
You must have enjoyed that. But this is, Florio is talking about this Bengals Chiefs game. These are names of football players that are on NFL teams. Quarterback Kyle Shermer threw a third down pass in the direction of Byron Pringle on the right side of the end zone.
Get him, Pringle.
Bengals quarterback Darius Phillips appeared to initiate contact. So it's an incompletion. The wide receiver clearly commits OPI. He's like shoving down the cornerback's head, but, this wasn't a challenge, by the way. It was an automatic. So now you can review it too in the final 2 minutes. Pardon the rule. The replay official looks at it. He's like, he just lets it go. So Florio points out, I think correctly, that if it had been a completed pass, he probably would have overturned it. Now, it makes a difference even though it's uncompleted because if there was a penalty, that does affect the game. So what he's introducing is this idea that refs, when they're adjudicating whether PI is happening, are going to consider, hey, what is this going to affect the outcome of the game? Is this like a dramatic thing? Are people going to care?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to happen.
I think it always happens, but
yes.
I think they want to create the perception that that we are not concerned with how it's going to or if it's going to impact the game. We're concerned with getting it right. I think it's a perception they want to put out there, but I think they know that their job, the NFL as a whole, their number one goal is to create an entertaining product.
Yes.
And if something's going to get in the way with that, I think coaches may have a problem, but the league is going to do their best to make the product as entertaining as possible.
I really think refs are like any other human like all of us,
yeah,
do ask themselves, will people be mad at me?
Yeah, of course they do.
And I'm okay with it. I'm okay with considering the outcome. I know it's in a perfect world, in a vacuum, you just want to make the exact right call every single time, but this is, it's an imperfect sport.
You know how I feel about like absolutes in general. I just don't believe in them. Like hard and fast rules just is not the way the world works. So like, that'll get you in trouble. I think you have to be able to bend a little bit every now and then, but not too much.
Headline. Sudfeld has surgery out 6 weeks. So Nate Sudfeld, the mm-hmm. Eagles backup, broke his wrist, kind of fell on it, mm-hmm. and is out 6 weeks, which means he will miss the first 2 weeks of the NFL season. I think this is one of the more notable injuries so far this summer. I know, which is great, by the way, that there haven't been like huge injuries. What do you think?
Selling it.
You don't think it's a big deal?
I guess I'm under the belief that what happened with Nick Foles is not something that we can bank on. So the situation there is if they end up with their backup quarterback, their season is over. That's what I think is the situation for most teams that have paid a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
You can't afford to also keep a guy on the bench that can ball. So as soon as they paid Carson Wentz, I'm going to assume that Nick Sudfeld is not a guy that – Nate Sudfeld is a guy that – that's going to make a difference.
So the Eagles' backup situation right now is they have Cody Kessler, who did not look great, and Clayton Thorson, the rookie, who looked even worse. He looked real bad. Okay. He's a developmental quarterback pick. His name is Clayton Thorson. Like, you know, I mean, it's just like, of course, you know, he's not ready to come and play an NFL game. You know, he threw a really comical interception, though. I highly recommend looking it up. But we're not going to win, or we're so good that we want a shot, but there's not a lot of options out there other than one Colin Kaepernick, they should sign. It's real ugly, which is interesting because right now I think NFL teams actually mostly are pretty well set up quarterback-wise, but like I was looking at who's out there. It's Josh Johnson just signed with the Lions. Like that, you know, when you're like, oh no, Josh Johnson's not available, that it's pretty ugly.
Yeah, the cupboard is bare. But I mean, it seems like you think it matters. And I know how high you are on the Eagles. You think that they are deep enough and good enough that a backup quarterback, the right backup quarterback, I think they've proven it, I guess, last year, but you think that they could repeat that they could still have Super Bowl aspirations, even though they just paid.
Okay. So here's what I think. I don't think they're going to find another Nick Foles. I think that was magic. There's no other backup quarterback waiting in the wings who's going to have this like ridiculous, you know, string of games. I do think that if Wentz goes down and look, if he goes down for more than six games, just good night. But if he's down for a few games and it's the difference between winning, getting a bye, I do think if they have competent quarterback play and it's the right opponents, they could win and maintain their advantage in the division. So I do think if I'm them, I go out. But again, it's other than Kaepernick, it's rough out there. Last headline, TMZ. $40 million Boston area mansion for sale. Retirement hint? So we're talking, of course, about one Thomas Brady.
I thought you were going to do that thing where
I was going to do Sam Bradford, but and I've already talked about his contract on this podcast. And basically, long story short, he can get out of it. Pets can get out of it. They can void after this year. It's a 1 year deal, and you know, I think it was very deliberate. Right? They want to reevaluate things after a year. Now, Tom Brady, we're setting aside the house thing, but Tom Brady has said he wants to play till he's 45. He is 42 or 41 now?
I think. Jesus. Yeah, 42. Wow. 1977.
Okay. So
August 3rd.
I'm going to ask you two questions. One, I'm going to ask you one question. Do you think there's any chance that Brady doesn't retire a Patriot?
No. I think he retires a Patriot.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a chance.
Do you think he retires before he's 45?
Yes.
I think so, too.
I think he retires before he's 45, and I think that he retires a Patriot. It seemed to me that Robert Kraft made it very clear during the Jimmy Garoppolo saga that He values Tom Brady's contribution enough that he will leave it up to Tom to stay as long as he wants and go out on his own terms. And I think Tom will not continue to play if he's not playing well. So
yes.
I think he'll fall off before 45, and I think he'll retire.
Yes,
be my guess.
He's going to throw that final Super Bowl pass to Jacoby Myers, my dynasty league. Apparently, N'Keal Harry's been killing it in camp. That's why we're talking about the preseason this way and not talking about I refuse to talk about N'Keal Harry killing it in camp and Jacoby Myers. But yeah, I think you're right. I just can't imagine him with another. What would be the funniest team?
I mean, it has to be the Jets, right? Or somebody in the division would be, I guess it would be odd. Funny team.
Jaguars. What would be the funniest jersey to see him in? It's the Jaguars.
The Ravens would be pretty funny to see him in a Ravens jersey.
He would look great in a Ravens. Hello? Colts? Okay, Dan.
Yeah, I guess that is.
That would be funny.
That is their big, or it was their big rival back when Peyton was there. I don't know. It's hard for me to even imagine.
I know it happens
so often in football, but I just can't really imagine it.
It's like when you see this is similar to what we were talking about earlier, and I'm sorry, but
don't apologize.
You ever see like a teacher outside of school and they're like, you're like, don't make eye contact with me. That's how I would feel seeing Tom Brady like in a Dolphins jersey or something.
No, it would be, I imagine that most people don't like the Patriots, but I feel like most football fans have a reverence or appreciation for Tom Brady. And I could probably be wrong. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people who like just want his career to end terribly. But like, I kind of want him to end it with the Patriots. Not like end it with a win, but I feel like I want him to end it with the Patriots. Like, he's been amazing, Mr. Patriot. Like,
I disagree. I want him on the Jaguars.
I figured, yeah. You're probably in the majority. Never mind.
I love it. Hey, guys. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place where you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. Dominique, what's the web address?
ZipRecruiter.com/Mina.
That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
How good are my ad reads?
Oh, phenomenal. I just logged on as ZipRecruiter myself. I don't have anywhere to hire people, but I'm a hire.
Single take, too. I'm glad you got to see that in person.
I see you, Hove.
Question one. You watched the premiere of Succession last night, right?
I did.
First of all, what did you think?
Oh, no, it was great.
I loved it last year. Yeah. That theme song, the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny theme song is a banger, but that theme song gets me going.
I want to talk to you about the show because you are obviously Mina Kimes, a former business journalist.
I know.
Like, I watch the show and I enjoy all the intricate fights and whatever, but I feel like you have a...
You went to B school. You've got a business background.
Going to business school is different than being a investigative business journalist. Like, I understand the terminology, but I don't feel it like you do.
Oh, but I love that when they talk about, like, you know, bear hugs, like all that stuff I used to study. And it's one of the few shows that really makes me miss it, man. Because I love it, and it makes it seem a lot more exciting than it was. I mean, one of my favorite books, I think I texted this to you last night, one of my favorite books is Barbarians at the Gate, which is about the takeover of RJR Nabisco. And it really captures that, like, crazy energy of, like, mergers and acquisitions. And
I could see you existing in that world.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a couple turns in your life that could have landed you jockeying in the C-suite to get that corner office and pulling all types of hijinks.
I don't know about that.
You could see Mina smiling right now. You guys would know that.
Well, this is a good transition to my second question. Okay. Irrespective of how much it would cost and how much money you would make, so throw money out the window, which NFL team would you buy? Would you like to own? Don't worry about money.
Right. Money doesn't matter.
If it was money, it would be the Cowboys. Yeah. You know, make a ton of money.
Yeah. I think
Like, what would be fun for you personally?
Weather's important.
Yes.
Location's important.
Yes.
I don't know. I feel like New York, though. I know I said weather's important, but like...
Giants or the Jets?
Giants.
But you're buying it right now, so you are also...
buying it right now? Oh, well, in that case, go Kansas City Chiefs.
But then
you got to live in Kansas City.
Well, no, hey, we don't know, no problems with Kansas City on this podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, Kansas City knows that they're not New York. Come on, let's be serious.
Okay, so you're considering right now. You are walking into this organization right now wearing a giant fur coat at your Dominique.
You better believe it.
I would wear a fur coat to every game. No, I don't wear fur.
Faux fur.
I don't even own. I don't know how. Where do you even buy fur?
Dog fur.
What a weird thing to say.
I mean, shave it off and then make a coat out of it. We're
I would. Oh dogs. My God, Lenny sheds so much hair, and I would absolutely wear a fur.
Lenny fur. That is one step away from murderer, right there. All right. I mean, I think you go with the team that you think is the longest run of championship.
But you're considering
potential.
Multiple factors.
Yeah,
a good team in a place you want to be, cool stadium.
I mean, yeah, I would. Arrowhead is fun to play in and play against. It's loud. Yeah, I would go with, I wouldn't live in Kansas City, no disrespect, but,
so you just fly in every day. Yeah, for game day.
I fly in and watch my man go busy, sit in my luxury box with the heat and enjoy the fans acting nuts.
See, I would love to own the Saints, but it feels like end of an era there. You want a team with a young quarterback.
Yep.
So definitely you've got that advantage with Kansas City. With the Rams, you got the new stadium, you get LA.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you get the weather,
organization,
you get the LA.
Yeah, it'd be successful.
Pretty cool. But yeah, it'd be pretty cool to be the man in LA, bring a Super Bowl to LA. But the fact of the matter is no one cares about the Rams in LA.
How dare you? No, I'm just kidding. I like the Jets now. You know I'm Sam Hive.
Yeah,
it'd be fun to own the New York football team.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a fun one.
I would, if I have to pick a New York team, I'd go Jets too, because
I mean, he looked great.
I can't imagine having to work with Gettleman every day.
Listen to me. I'm like, Daniel Jones, 5 for 5, whatever. Sam Darnold looked great. They both look good. All the young, every single freaking young quarterback looked good. It's hilarious. Question 3. What is the most you've ever been humiliated on a football field?
Most I've ever been humiliated on a football field. I mean, I've never had anything that was like an embarrassingly bad play, but like I've given up game-winning touchdowns. That's humiliating, but it wasn't like somebody took it off my back.
You've never been like, whoop, like you've been juked out of your shorts.
Oh, yes, actually. LaDainian Tomlinson. I was playing nickelback, and they were in the red zone, and so nickel is essentially a linebacker. They created the formation that put me like in the box, and there was a big hole, and LaDainian came into that hole, and I was about to tackle him, or so I thought. And he did something, and then he was behind me in the end zone, and I was on my ground. So on the ground. So yeah, that's pretty embarrassing.
If there's a guy, to at least it's LT.
Oh yeah, it was LT.
Could be a lot worse. Could have been Nathan Peterman juking you in the end zone.
Yeah, I remember that quite vividly. He also scored like a record-setting touchdown, and not on that play. It was same game later in that game, I think. And I was the closest man to him. It wasn't my responsibility to make tackle somebody else's fault. But the point is, I'm in the picture of him breaking some record.
He's 40 years old now.
Looks great. That
he does look, I was curious because I wanted to see how much he weighed, 215.
I had dinner with him and Darren Sproles many years ago at one of the Super Bowls, and Darren Sproles still in the league.
It's unbelievable.
It's mind-blowing.
This unabashedly we stand for Darren Sproles on this podcast. Last question of mine. So you've seen those table memes, like what table would you sit at?
Yeah.
That went around Twitter, jumped the shark pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I want you to put together a 3-person table of ESPN people. But I don't want it to be your friends.
Uh-huh.
I just want it to be like, what would be the most interesting table? Not the people you like the most, because I know that would be me. Scintillating or like,
before me.
Because like there was one table where it was like Belichick, Guy Fieri, and Megan Rapinoe, and I was like, yes.
Yeah.
That kind of table, but ESPN people.
All right, so I feel like Stephen A. comes out
originally
at the top, but he might dominate the table.
True.
So we need some other strong personalities who can push back if we're going to have Stephen A. at the table, or we take him out altogether. I don't know.
That's a tough one.
I feel like we just leave Stephen A. in at the table.
Right? Okay. So you need people who will stand up to him or...
Bomani. He'll go at Stephen A.
He will. It's a great combo.
I appreciate that combo. So now what else do we need?
I feel like Katie Nolan would go toe-to-toe with those guys.
Maybe, yeah. You're messing up what I'm doing.
Though, okay, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
And Jay Harris. No, I'm with you. I like Katie. Katie's funny, and she'll go back and forth. She'll make some jokes.
She won't be cowed by them.
And she'll bring a different perspective.
Yes.
Okay, so how many is it? Four at the table?
No, it's three.
Three at the table. Yeah, that's it.
That's a good group.
Katie, Bo, and the goat.
Okay. Last question, always from Dominique, or from Lenny. It's for Dominique. Dominique, why do you keep butt-dialing my mom? Stop it.
That only happened once.
No, it didn't.
And I'm old.
It's happened so many times.
It's only happened
once. You are so bad at using your phone.
Oh, man, I'm old. Leave me alone.
Also, let me read this text exchange while we're doing this.
Text
this morning.
Shaming. You're always text shaming.
Because your texts are terrible.
My texts are great.
For such a intelligent conversationalist.
I'm a slow texter. I don't know.
From this morning. Dominique, want to meet downstairs at 12:15? If you want. Dominique, do you want to meet me downstairs? Just answer the freaking question. It sounded worse in my mind. I didn't really,
see, now, yeah. Ha. I win. You're a bad text interpreter, so now it's over.